This summer, click into cordless power with Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. And keep your flower beds looking fresh with the 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Then clear leaves and debris with the 40-volt leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at the Home Depot and on homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
Hey there, all you lovely listeners. Let's dive into this latest release that is going to suck the life out of you in the best way possible. So listen up, because the Womanizer Next 3D Pleasure Air Stimulator, available from Pink Cherry, takes pleasure to a whole new dimension, literally. Imagine taking the speed and intensity of the original groundbreaking Pleasure Air technology combined with new climax control so you can control even the depth of the airwaves. The 3D Pleasure Air technology offers a deeper, richer sensation that might just transport you to another universe of pleasure. The Womanizer Next 3D, available from Pink Cherry, is the only toy that allows you to take complete control of your orgasm journey with fully customizable speeds, intensities, and depths. Made from soft touch silicone, a fully waterproof body, and smart silence technology, you can enjoy pleasure anywhere, anytime. So what are you waiting for? Ditch the dull and enjoy unparalleled pleasure from the Womanizer Next 3D, available from Pink Cherry. Visit pinkcherry.com and save an extra 20% off with code NEXT.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of 100 Words or Less, the podcast. I'm your host, Ray Harkins, and happy new year. Happy 2016. Hopefully, yours started off very good. Mine is a little stuffy because I'm sick, so I apologize for the nasally nature of my voice, but that happens, you know? Everybody gets sick this time of the year. The temperatures change, it gets cold, and it just happens that way. So, but I hope that you are going to get 2016. It's your year. You're going to kill it, whatever. So many people like to use all those cliches at the beginning of the year to transform their life and do all these amazing things. To me, it's all bullshit. You should just be constantly evolving, constantly pushing yourself all year. Like, you don't need a flipping of the calendar to do that. I understand it's very symbolic, and it's easier for most people to wrap their heads around when they're doing that. But I just can't stand that. Because, I mean, you see it. I see it in the gym that I go to, where it's like all of a sudden, first week of January, it's like, dude, this is way more crowded. Third week of January, it's a ghost town. And it's hard. It's hard to care. It's hard to not be lazy. But, so anyways, I always push against those conventions. But if you use that as a motivating factor, awesome. Go for it. Do it to it. Anyways, you're not here to hear my thoughts of the new year. Well, maybe some of you are. But what many of you are here to listen to is a conversation with people in and around independent music. And this one is so delightful. It is a longtime friend, Nick Grimaldi. Most people know him by Biggie, as his nickname is given to him. And you know, it's funny, because in the entire conversation, I never asked him why he has that nickname, and I've known him as such for, gosh, you know, close to 20 years, and I don't know the story, but I'm sure after he listens to this, he will email me and be like, oh, this is why. So anyways, maybe in the postscript, maybe in next week's episode, I'll be like, oh, hey, this is why Biggie is named Biggie. So anyways, he manages basically most of your favorite bands that are active right now, from Every Time I Die to Circus Survive. Like, Good Fight Management is the name of his company, and he does great, great work. And typically, I don't like to interview too many people behind the scenes, because I know a lot of people kind of maybe feel disconnected from that because maybe they're not interested in working in the music industry or whatever. But Biggie is a perfect guest because, he himself didn't really know where he was going to end up for the future, and everything in regards to what people are supposed to do from a, you know, societal convention standpoint. I mean, he had no idea. So his life story is pretty cool, and I wanted to share it with you. So he invited me over to his house. We sat down, hung out, and this is what transpired. So Here's our conversation, and I will talk to you after the jump.
Are we on? Are we doing this?
No, we're recording, but this may or may not be on there.
We redid the whole house in Santa Ana.
Like, oh, okay.
Redid everything.
Right.
And then...
For the purpose of selling it, or you were...
No, like, just, this is it. We're buying a house, and this is where we're going to live. Like, I was just amazed I could buy a house in Orange County. And I'm like, this is it. Like,
right.
Put roots in. My mom lived in Fountain Valley and has since I was born and still does. And I'm like, you buy a house, and that's where you stay. So I'm like, I bought the house. I redid everything, insane. Front yard, backyard, everything. Every surface. And then, you know, business picked up, and we're like, dude, we could, like, maybe go live in Costa Mesa, or in the east side of Costa Mesa, or whatever.
Right.
And found this place, and or while we were shopping, we just decided, like, the renovation was a nightmare, obviously, as everyone says. And I'm like, if we get a new house, because I'm fine, I can live in the Santa Ana house till I'm dead. I'm fine.
Right. Yeah.
If we get a new house, it has to be like, put the couch there, put the TV there, done. You know, I'm not doing anything.
And so right. This one, it's like a plug and play.
Literally. And this one was literally, put the couch there. We had to get a bigger couch, but put the couch there.
Right.
Mount the TV, throw my clothes in the closet, and I was like, see you later.
Right.
Don't do anything.
Hey, take some pictures. We're good.
Yes.
That's, yeah.
Yes.
All right, well, that's definitely, that's what it was like when we, because I live in Tustin, like right by the district. And it was, that was one of those things. We were looking at places in like Huntington Beach and Fountain Valley. And it was like, for our price range, I was like, dude, I'm going to buy like a 40-year-old home where every weekend I have to fix shit. Mm-hmm. I don't want that at all. I want to buy a new place. And so we bought a new place, and that's what it was like. Oh yeah, that's great. So I don't, like, every weekend I'm not like, all right, let's get the shutters. What? Fuck that.
I know, dude. It's insane. It's such a weird time too, because all my friends are buying, looking, and dealing. And just thinking back to that mindset, it's like, you know, like, do I buy the newer house there or the older house where I want to live? Oh, like, I had this weird, still have this thing where it's like, I can only live in these like four cities,
right.
You know?
Like,
Santa Ana wasn't one of them. You know, that it was right. Like a last ditch effort. It was like, well, Costa Mesa is too expensive. Huntington Beach is too expensive. Fountain Valley is weird. I've lived there for 30 years at that point almost.
Right.
You know?
I gotta spread my wings a little bit.
Spread my wings and get like down to Bristol. And that's how we ended up in Santa Ana.
Okay.
Then, my friends now are like, well, we can have a shanty in Costa Mesa or like this big nice house in Anaheim or this big nice house in Orange.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, so, yeah.
But I was like, I have this terrible thing where it's like, I'll live in like four cities.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Hopefully it goes away.
Well, hopefully it goes away where you get, well, I mean, I think it has to do with obviously a level of comfort where you're just like, oh, this is like, not only is this what I know, but then like, I mean, obviously with people like you and I who are comfortable traveling, it's like we can see other stuff and experience other things, but then we're like, oh yeah, I'm going to go back because why does anybody,
the best.
Right. Why would you live anywhere besides Southern California?
Yeah. It's probably more than necessary pride in Orange County. You know, like very much love Orange County. And looking back now, it's like, honestly, why? Besides like the weather and like obviously my friends, but it's like,
it's
great. But it's like the amount of like, oh, I could never leave.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little unjust.
Right.
I feel you're too into Orange County for kind of no reason. Now that I'm 35, I'm looking back and like, you know, we're not sitting around with Throwdown and Ethan Visions talking about
the
Orange County.
House. Right.
Now we're not softcore and I can probably live wherever, but it's like, no, I live in Orange County.
Yeah, of course. That's what I'm doing. It's funny because you're one of those you're one of those people where it's just like, and I presume that you probably couldn't pinpoint that. I have no fucking clue where I met you. Like,
oh, God,
we just existed in obviously the same universe.
Parallel universe. Yeah, just through music, obviously through hardcore shows.
Right.
I don't remember anything before Taken.
Right.
You know?
No. It was I played in like a terrible band before that, but nothing that like we never. Our worlds never intersected. Like we never played shows besides, you know, playing Public Storage when it was Public Storage.
Right.
But that
back
was,
when.
You know, that was nothing.
Yeah. I couldn't, no way. I could. That's
totally.
How like most of my friends are, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like that era of whatever it was, probably late 90s, early 2000s. It was just a swirl of a weird case of like tunnel vision of like, this is my journey. I wasn't in a band, you know? So it's like, this is like, I'm just going to shows to mosh, jump off stages, just basically be obnoxious looking back, you know, like I was obnoxious.
Hey, you were literally taking the words right out of my mouth. So since you did that for me, I'll trace it back. So it was just like the idea of like, once I started to become, you know, Take-It started to play more shows with obviously all the Orange County bands, and we started to become more part of the scene. It was one of those things where it's like, you were always this person where I was just like, God, like Biggie's that guy. Like, you're always nice to me, and I never had any sort of like misgivings towards you. But I was just like, man, he dances so fucking hard, and he dives on people's heads. It's like, he's kind of a dick. But like, but actually,
but
I
he's always smiling and kind of like says hi to me. So he's not, I guess he's not a dick, but fuck him because my neck hurts.
Totally. It was like this, it was just this weird push and pull where it wasn't like, I had no strong opinions, like I said, one way or the other. But it was one of those things where it was like, and it just got me reflecting on like when people's reputations precede them, especially within obviously the context of the scene, where it's just like, I'm sure there are people who can like look back at that time and are just like, oh yeah, Biggie's the worst dude of all time.
Totally. And I've met so, like, sadly met so many people that are like, okay, I gotta be honest, I used to fucking hate you.
Right.
And I'm like, dude, what? Like, I was an asshole not intending to be. I was just in my own world.
Right. Like, no, I think you said it bad, like, obnoxious, where it was like, but I mean, you what, like 17?
Oh, like, 17 to like 20 something, just hyper as hell.
Right.
All my friends were the equivalent to Metallica to me. You know, like, I would count down the days for a Throwdown show and the days for these, like, I'd be so pent up and just be, I would lose my mind at Showcase Theater. The whole, I couldn't even physically do it. Like, I couldn't even jog as long as I danced back then, you know, like, right. I don't even know how I did it.
Right.
But God, I loved it, man. And like, maybe it's because I was never in a band and that was like my stage, or just the fact that I don't know.
Yeah.
I loved it, man. And looking back, it's like, why did I think it was okay to walk on heads or to just hit someone extremely hard? Like, it wasn't intentionally, but understanding like laws of, you know.
You're right.
It's going to happen when the way I'm moving my body around with 600 people in this room the size of this office. You know?
Right, right. No, like I said, it just really got me reflecting on like the notion of that, because it's like, because we're obviously sort of on the ground floor of that sort of scene becoming more nationally known, there was all of these personalities, I mean, you included, where it was just like, oh yeah, it's like, yeah, Biggie's that guy that, like, you know, like, he's not in the band, but like, he'll travel with the band and like, he'll definitely represent
the scene. Like, he'll represent the pit, whatever.
Just the worst words that we used to say. Like,
totally.
And I just find it so interesting, because it is this thing where it's like, because we're so young and dumb, and then like having to like live with those sort of reputations at such an age where, you know, you shouldn't have a reputation besides like in your high school, maybe, you know? But then it's like on a more nationwide level, it's just so weird.
Yeah, it is. Like, I just that I would travel and I would be, you know, these bands that in my head were huge, we would go play places and nobody would move. And I'd be like, well, this is unacceptable. Like, I must activate this show.
Of course. I must like, set this off, right?
Yeah. And like, I literally took that, like, this is my job, but I took it like, Norma Jean is not going to have a bad show. I don't care if these kids don't know them yet. You know what I mean? When they're opening for Bleeding Through 100 years ago or whatever.
Right.
You know, and I would just be like, I don't know why I took that on as like my duty, but I would every single day, all day, dance at shows, on tour. I'd meet people and they were just like, I used to hate you all the time.
You know?
Go places where they were like, much like actual, you know, everyone talks about, oh, when the scene was dangerous, like,
yeah,
for me it was never dangerous
right
at all, but I understand people there it was, like when I talked to like dudes from Syracuse and all that,
yeah,
and like
Philly
like meeting these, you know, yeah, meeting these guys that I'm still friends with now, just like, they could have killed me, like acting how I was acting, you know. What if Joe Hardcore is like, all right, fuck this guy, or Guav, like, take out one of his 400 knives and he's like, I fuck this guy, you know.
Yeah.
Luckily, we're all friends now.
You know? No, totally. It is. It is funny because I think it is a very obviously it was a very safe scene from where we were. I mean, because it's just suburban, you know.
Totally.
And then it's like the big cities. I definitely distinctly remember of just like, yeah, once your worldview started to expand, where you're just like, oh, like, yeah, there's some tough people out there.
Yeah, like, I remember I would just mosh, and then I got to like a Syracuse matinee.
Uh-huh.
You guys played one, right? Like the New Year's Day shows. You guys ever do those?
Oh, no, we never. I'm familiar with them, but
they're
we never
insane.
Played one of those.
And I just remember being like, I am not dancing. Like, this is insane. We're not in Orange County anymore, you know?
Totally.
We're not in Arizona. We're not in Texas.
Right.
We're in Syracuse with people with masks and,
right,
you know.
We're not in Salinas.
No, we are not in Salinas. Jim Dandy's is not you know?
Yeah. No, it's it's definitely true when you come up to that stark realization, like, not only am I far from home logistically, but it's like, this is a whole different culture here.
Yeah.
I can't do what my obnoxious self normally does.
I don't have like the whole world behind me just in case at all. It's like, go ahead. I'll be on the sideline.
Yeah. I'll watch you guys. Maybe I'll do a stage dive. That's about it.
Yeah.
But you, like you mentioned before, so you were born and raised in Orange County.
Yeah.
Like tried and true, Fountain Valley.
I lived in Fountain Valley until I was 25. Lived at home until I was 25 because I was touring so much. My mom's just like, if you stay in college, you can live here for free. So I'm like, I'm never leaving. Until I was 25 and had like a mental breakdown of like, I'm 25 and I live at home. I was in Europe when I had it. And I'm like texting my friend, or probably emailing at that point, I guess.
Sure.
In 05, I'm like, we got to move out. You're 24, I'm 25. Let's get out of here. And we got a place together in Costa Mesa. But even that was 2 miles away from my mom. Then I moved to Santa Ana, which was 2 miles away from that. Then I moved back to Eastside Costa Mesa. So this 4-square-mile bubble for 35 years.
Right.
And hopefully not leaving anytime
soon. Yeah, exactly. And you're completely comfortable with that.
Yeah.
And so what was your family structure like when you were growing up? Like mom and dad, brothers and sisters?
One brother, 4 years older.
Okay.
Single mom. Dad was kind of standard asshole.
Okay.
Alcoholic, druggy guy that was like, you know,
did
all
they,
that jazz.
They get divorced at a, like you were pretty
yeah,
young? Yeah, okay.
I don't remember them being married. I remember when they were still like, maybe they were married, but they were not together.
Okay.
You know, I feel like they got, the, I don't, I'm terrible with timelines, which is probably going to become
a recurring theme here. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember them ever together, but yeah, I stopped talking to my dad when I was like probably younger than 10.
Oh, okay.
And then, we reconnected once since then, but he's not in my life.
Yeah, there's no influence whatsoever.
Not at all. Like total, totally tight with my mom, like extremely tight to this day, and pretty tight with my brother. We're very different people, but when we get together, it's great. But total mama's boy, total call her every day, that all that jazz.
Yep.
But no dad.
Right.
I have a stepdad now who's the shit, but he didn't come into the picture until like, you know, when I was like, I don't know, 20-ish or something.
Oh, okay.
Even a little older.
Yeah.
So, you know, the core years is definitely single mom, single income,
sure,
all that jazz.
What was she doing for work?
She was a teacher. This is actually, you know, not a lot of people know this, but when my parents were together, they were like really well off.
Okay.
I don't remember this, but
right,
we had a house in Huntington Harbor, the house my mom currently has in Fountain Valley, a house in Big Bear.
Oh, geez, yeah.
Mom drove a Cadillac. Dad drove a Corvette. Like,
sure.
The full, like, we were living in the 80s, right? Like,
totally.
I don't remember this, but.
Yeah.
Dad made mom stop being a teacher. She's a teacher. Said, you don't need to work. Raise our kids.
Oh, right, sure. Be the homemaker, right.
Totally. Be a homemaker. Well, she's like, oh, I love being a teacher, but yeah, we're doing so great. I'll be a homemaker. Shit goes south with my parents. He, in a very long story, ends up taking everything except that house, which he put in my brother and my name as in a trust.
Okay.
Because in his mind, like, I'm going to fuck the wife. Like,
sure.
You know,
she won't have any ownership.
She's not going to have shit ever. You know, he hid all his income. She didn't have to pay child support, all this crazy stuff. And the only thing we had was that house to eventually, and I don't understand why. He's probably at some point thinking I was just going to give it back to him.
Mm-hmm.
But us being on the trust allowed my mom to live in the house essentially free because we basically owned it.
Right.
You know? It's the only reason we actually lived.
Stayed there. Know? Yeah, yeah. That you actually were able to like stay in Orange County.
Totally,
sure.
Totally. And so I kind of bounced away, but she was a teacher, but then started working in like banking, like mortgage banking.
Oh, okay.
Climbed the ladder there, but went from a very modest salary as a teacher to starting at the bottom and then working her way up to being a vice president until she retired. Yeah, the early years, I didn't know it at the time, but we were spread thin.
Sure.
You know? Like,
yeah, your mom was doing whatever she could.
Totally. Just total, you know, out of the storybook, single mom, raising two kids.
Yeah.
All I did was skateboard, you know, so I didn't need that much attention. But looking back when I would like ask for a few bucks for arcade games, and it's like, oh, not today, you know, and I'd just be like, oh, all right.
Right.
It wasn't out of like, no, like you're going to learn these values. It's like, no, we don't have.
Yeah, I literally don't have $5 today, to give you. Know?
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, we were fine. It's not like we're poverty stricken, but it was definitely tight. And considering how we were supposed to be with all these houses, and my dad was he was like an appraiser, so he made like really good money.
Uh-huh.
amongst other things. I don't know. He's a pretty sketchy dude. So
well, I mean, obviously it sounds, I mean, just you setting up the story of the fact that he's obviously, it was a very predetermined thing for him to hide all of, like, basically so your mom wouldn't have any.
Oh, yeah. Super, like, Italian, like, over the top mafia, wannabe mafia.
Yeah.
Just a fake asshole, you know?
Sure.
Like, he's a pile.
Yeah.
But, you know, abusive to her, abusive more to my brother than me, doing drugs, all that crap.
Right.
Drinking way too much. And
then finally she was fed up.
Finally she's just like, I'm fucking out of here. Mm-hmm. And went through a crazy, all this is fuzzy, but it was gnarly at that point in my life. Went through a crazy custody battle where, like out of a movie, there was like this rich guy who has the money and time and assets to go after woman who has nothing. And we're so young, you know, probably like 12 and 8 or like 11 and 7 or something, my brother and I, no matter what we say to the judge, like, I don't like my dad, I want to stay with my mom, it doesn't mean anything at that point. And yeah, it got
that's brutal.
Yeah, it got pretty rough for a while. And
I mean, especially because it's like, you know, when you're a child, you don't obviously understand all the complex nuances that go behind all of that. And so it's like, you're just like, but I just want to do this.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be with my mom. And then you're like, well, do you really mean that? I'm 7. Like,
yeah, I was so young. And I don't know why certain things stick in your head, but I remember once when I was young asking my brother, like, who do you like more, mom or dad?
Uh-huh.
And he was old enough to be like, you can't ask that. Like, we love them both the same. And I remember being like, okay. And I'm like, but I love mom way more. Like, am I bad? Is that wrong? Like,
right.
Dad's kind of a dick.
Yeah, you know, totally.
My mom rules. Like, we were split like 1 week at a time. 1 week mom, 1 week dad. 1 week
mom,
1 week
dad. Got it.
And
so it wasn't obviously like cut off to the point of where you didn't see him, but it's like you still were able to develop an opinion on him.
Yeah, and I just remember dreading the like dad week, you know?
Dude,
like,
that's the worst.
Sucks. And it was like, on one hand, we had the bigger TV and we had all these toys and all that at dad's house.
Sure.
But I hated being there.
Right.
And opposite, all we had was like, you know, my shitty chipped up skateboard, but like rad mom.
Totally.
So like, we just looked forward to that. And we finally, you know, long, long story short, we got it sorted. And it ended when I was like 17, officially, when I was like old enough to be like, I'm going to fuck you up. You know, like,
I can't believe that it dragged on for that long.
It dragged on forever. And I was finally, I remember I was in the garage phone leaving to go skateboarding, and he was calling and harassing. And I was like, I'm old enough now to say this. Like, I like stepped up to a dude that probably would have smashed me still. But in my head, I was like, I'm going to kill this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of left us alone for a long time. And then, fast forward a lot of years, when I was like 27, I did that thing called the Landmark Forum.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyone who doesn't know can look it up. It's pretty weird, but.
Right. I was definitely, towards my tenure, my end of working at Century Media, that was when my boss, Robert, was very, very into that. And he was getting a lot of people that work there to go to there.
It's cool. It's funny. If you Google it, if you put in like the Landmark Forum and the guesses, it'll say Landmark Forum. Second one, the Landmark Forum is a cult.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so just like anything else, I mean, it's a total tangent, but.
Yeah.
The Landmark Forum is amazing, and I highly recommend it.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to have your filter on and be like, okay, I'm taking that info, that's fucking weird. I'm going to leave that there.
Right.
That info's great, and I'm not going to go and tell all my family to come you know what I mean?
Yeah, so yeah, yeah.
I just pulled out certain things.
Use it as a tool rather than like.
Just like anything else in life. You
sure,
know?
Exactly.
And one of the things I got out of that like 4-day, all-day seminar was like to just let go of things that you're holding on to. And my whole life, like if you ask anyone that's known me, I've never been like, fuck my dad, you know, like at all. I didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
But after you go through this process, you realize that like you are holding on to something. And even if like you don't think it's affecting you every day, you just need to let it go, you know?
Right.
And so I, long story short, I got his contact, reached out to him. We actually met up.
Okay.
And like I said, long story short, he's still just an asshole.
Totally. You were just like, this,
like he
this
met my
confirms
wife.
It.
Yeah, like, this is my wife. And like, if I was very upfront, I'm like, if we want to have a relationship, it has to start like today. Because if we go backwards, I'm going to freak out. You used to hit my mom. You used to hit my brother. You used to hit me. You chose drugs and alcohol over us. Like, we can't go back there.
Right.
But if you want to start today and say like, you know, tell me about your new wife and, you know, not new, 15-year marriage and kid, and you can learn about my wife at the time and blah, blah. So we met once and it worked. We met another time, and then he got weird about the house, that going back to like us being in the trust of the house and the mm-hmm. fact that we like let my mom in on the trust and all this stuff. And I'm just like, you're just still a psycho. I don't need you. I barely have time to even think about you now.
Right.
I just don't need you. I'm just going back with like my amazing family, amazing life. But I like, turned the page on it, you know,
totally.
Thanks to Landmark, and just being like, I even tried. When I told my family, like I told my brother, I'm like, I'm going to reach out to my dad. He's like, are you fucking crazy?
Right, right. This is a bad idea.
You're an idiot.
Right.
And I had him do Landmark, and he's like, yeah, that was awesome. I mean, I'm not reaching out to dad. Fuck him.
Right, right.
But like Landmark is sick. I'm like, okay. Well.
Right.
But yeah.
That chapter is proverbially closed.
Yeah, he had like, I guess, you know, quote, worse than me. He was older, and
yeah.
A, remembers it more, and B, I think he was hit more than me. Like, it's not really talked about, but I think it was like,
he was receiving more of the shit because he was essentially live for long, like he was on the scene first.
Yeah, and I was just young and little and
yeah. So it's interesting. Do you think any of obviously the experiences that you had with your father like influenced the idea of like, you know, straight edge and like
100%.
That's okay.
100%. It was like straight edge to me was like I was straight edge, and then I heard there was a name for it. Basically,
you know what I mean. Yeah.
Kind of like when I read The Secret, that book, The Secret.
Yep.
It's like the whole like
the manifestation
shit.
Of it. Yeah.
It's like, oh, this is just a title of what I already do. Like I'm already positive. You know what I mean? I'm already positive and thinking like the universe is around me. I want to have like good energy. But yeah, straight edge was like, you know, drink, don't smoke. Yeah, all I do is skateboard. It started technically with skateboarding because it's like when people were getting into it in like 7th, 8th, 9th grade, it's like, well, I can't skate when I'm drunk. And that's all I wanted to do.
Right.
So it's like everyone's drinking. I'm gonna skate. You know, I'll go to the party, but I'm gonna be skating in the front or something.
Right.
And then I just never got into it. I tried like a couple beers with my older brother once.
Right.
Like, this is whack.
Yeah. Like, you're like not interested.
Not interested. And never looked back. And will never look back for sure.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like it's people are like, I can't believe you're still straight edge. And it's like I'm just me. There's a title out there that makes sense to be
totally
that, but.
Yeah. No, I'm the same way where it's like, but it's funny because I still have this weird notion that it's like, if I give up that title, if I just, you know, I mean, cause we're grown ass men now. We don't need to call ourselves straight edge.
I mean, I have an X right there, you know, on the crown,
right.
But
I know we have
still love
Urban Outfitter accoutrements that's, you know, show that we're straight edge.
A little subtle.
Right. But then I always look at it where it's like, if I give up that title, I feel like the dumb kids win. Like the people that give straight edge a bad name
totally
win because people like you and I have like, oh, we're not that title anymore. It's like, well, no, like we are.
Yeah. Like I'm still super, super proud of it, you know? And, I don't know. I don't think it's for everyone. I don't think it's for most people. I don't care when people stop doing it or anything like that. I think it's weird when people stop doing it like when they're really old.
Yeah, you're like, you've been through
like
this.
Yeah, it's like just, you know, each their own, and that's cool. But if you're not, if you don't know who you are yet, that's a little weird.
Yeah,
it's cool, like go do your thing.
Sure, but figure it out eventually.
Yeah. It's just weird.
This summer, click into Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot and get after those outdoor projects with some serious cordless power from Ryobi. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. Leaves and debris are no match for the 40-volt power of the Ryobi leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Tidy up those flower beds and keep your walkways looking sharp with Ryobi's 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Yard work, done and done. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at your cordless power source, the Home Depot. Shop now at the Home Depot or homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
Hey there, all you lovely listeners. Let's dive into this latest release that is going to suck the life out of you in the best way possible. So listen up, because the Womanizer Next 3D Pleasure Air Stimulator, available from Pink Cherry, takes pleasure to a whole new dimension, literally. Imagine taking the speed and intensity of the original groundbreaking Pleasure Air technology combined with new climax control so you can control even the depth of the airwaves. The 3D Pleasure Air technology offers a deeper, richer sensation that might just transport you to another universe of pleasure. The Womanizer Next 3D, available from Pink Cherry, is the only toy that allows you to take complete control of your orgasm journey with fully customizable speeds, intensities, and depths. Made from soft touch silicone, a fully waterproof body, and smart silence technology, you can enjoy pleasure anywhere, anytime. So what are you waiting for? Ditch the dull and enjoy unparalleled pleasure from the Womanizer Next 3D, available from Pink Cherry. Visit pinkcherry.com and save an extra 20% off with code NEXT.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We're sitting here. It's like June, and you're like, where has the time gone? And everybody's like, oh my gosh, I have no idea. I got to like accomplish all these other things. Take a moment. focus on the things that obviously for one matter to you, but for two, look back, be like, what have I done well? What have I done not so well? And maybe I can, you know, ask some friends and family for some help. But where I have always gone to in regards to figuring out what I can do better, therapy. Therapy is an incredible tool at your arsenal that you can dip into. I've done it for my marriage. I've done it for myself personally. And I'm a huge advocate for what therapy can do for you because it is a third party that's able to look at what you can do to improve your life and be a person to help you along in your journey. And so I think if you were thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and entirely suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire, you get matched with a licensed therapist, and then boom, you're done. It's great. And then if you're not vibing with the therapist, you can switch it at no additional cost. So take a moment, reflect on the things you've done, reflect on the things you want to do, and visit betterhelp.com/ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/ray.
And so you strike me as a type of person, like, you know, once you started to, you know, go to high school and start to develop like kind of who you were, you strike me as a person, what I like to call a chameleon, where it's like, and I don't mean this in a bad way, where it's like, you're able to kind of like flip between groups where it's just like you could hang out with the people who are like, you know, whatever, the proverbial jocks in high school, but then you can also obviously hang out with the hardcore kids. Was that kind of like who you were, or did you kind of stick to one group more?
Yeah, less? No, I was, and still am. Like my friends call me a social butterfly, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I get along with everyone, and I was, you know, we actually had it lucky at our school because everyone talks about like, oh, we were the weird like seven straightest dudes at our school, which we were, but when I was a freshman, the like seniors, like the football stars, like our literal quarterback and running backs were straight edge. And So like it kind of set this weird like, all right, straight edge dudes are all right. I mean, granted, those dudes were not edge now and probably weren't like 6 months later.
Right.
But it set this like precedent of like straight edge kids aren't necessarily like the dorks and the weird outcasts. Like they're just
right. There's like a ton.
Parties. Yeah, they're at the parties and they're just not drinking. You know,
still sure.
Get our little jabs. But
right.
Yeah, totally. I would hang out with my crew of weird straight edge dudes and then like skateboarders and, you know, like some of the like cool guys at school and all that jazz. That would define me. But then when I met the like Huntington and Newport guys, then it was like party over. I'm like, dude, fuck my school. These dudes are whack. And there is such a bigger crew than our weird eight. They're like a weird like 50, you know?
Right.
I'm like, this is great.
Because did you go to Newport Harbor?
Or
did
I went to Fountain Valley, but I met a kid that got transferred to Fountain Valley from, I don't know if he's from Harbor or not, come to think of it, but, you know, this guy who looked like a hardcore dude in the late 90s and had an AIDS and Vision sticker on his folder got transferred to our school, and I'm like, who the fuck are you?
Right.
You know?
Like, where did you come from?
And, yeah, he's like, oh, AIDS and Visions are like all my friends, and at this point, I didn't know any of them. I'm like, what? You know, this is insane at that point. So that guy, his name was Brandon, introduced me to Ken Floyd, who I'm still good friends with, and that introduced me to all the Newport dudes,
which
I'm still very good friends with all of them. That's how I met, you know, Throwdown and 18 Visions and touring and all that shit.
Yeah,
one
guy
that got transferred.
That's amazing, yeah. It's funny that you're able to, like, kind of always distill those things down to one point where it's just like, like, if I didn't meet that one person, who knows where that would have gone. And so then as you did you immediately, like, you know, once you started to like go to shows and be, well, I guess a better question, how did you get exposed to it in the first place? Like, was it like your older brother, or how did, you know, kind of the independent music scene start to infiltrate you?
As I've heard on your show, like 400 times, skateboarding but I was more skateboarding into metal for some reason. I guess the style of skateboarding I was more like kind of thrasher and like, you know, heavy metal stuff and listen to like Slayer and stuff like that. But like I guess I always liked aggressive music because back when like Guns N' Roses was, Guns N' Roses and Skid Row was like the heaviest thing I could ever imagine. And I heard Metallica, and then I dove into like Slayer and Pantera and Sepultura and all that. So I was like this metal guy, like, cool, I'm this metal guy that skateboards. But then like the cool skateboarder guy, well, I thought was cool. He's probably like a big nerd, but
yeah,
the dude I thought was cool because he skated the fastest and like drove before me and all that. All he listened to was like Misfits and Dead Kennedys and stuff like that. So I got crazy into punk.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess once I found like the, at that time, like that metalish hardcore. That mm-hmm. was when I was like, this is it. This is the hybrid.
Yeah.
This is the world I
love.
At-
this is the metal I love. This is it. And so that was it. It was skateboarding into punk from my friend Brandon. And then once I met everyone, it was like, you know,
yeah,
off from there.
No, totally. You felt like you stepped into something where it's just like, and I felt it too, where it's like, you feel like you step into something that's like kind of your own in a way too, where it's just like, because obviously it's like, since that the metallic hardcore thing started to become so prevalent in the mid and late 90s, it wasn't this like 15 to 20 year history you had to play catch up with.
Totally. It was like, I was living in it. That was the thing. Yeah. I have like no I listen to older hardcore and like I can talk old hardcore and all that jazz, but like I didn't dive in as crazy as other people did at all.
Yeah.
Because the excitement for me was the live setting. Like I remember distinctly like being heartbroken if I was like into a band and then finding out they were from Europe. I'm never going to fucking see these guys.
Right.
Or like into this record and they would break up or something. Cause the whole, like the payoff, like the work of like memorizing it and loving it and getting so passionate about it was when Turmoil would come through town and I would just go ape shit.
Yeah.
Cause I knew every word and every lyric, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I would listen to the old stuff, but once I fell in love with the live setting, it was really hard for me to not stay up on what's new. And that's how I still am. Like mm-hmm. I listen to all my old stuff too, but I still love listening to new music and going to shows, and you know, I still absolutely love it. I don't mosh as much anymore.
Yeah, right. You know? Yeah, you've learned how to adapt to your own age, where it's like, that's, you know, I don't need to do that anymore.
But I still like did a good hardcore show where I'm just like, man, it's great. I love it. Look forward to it.
Totally.
I still absolutely love it.
Yeah, it's like those emotions, no matter how long you've been experiencing them, they're still so fresh when you do trip across it, where it's just like, oh yeah, that mimicked exactly what I felt like 20 totally. Years ago or whatever. Did you, like, as you were, you know, going through high school, did you care at all in regards to school? Like, did you have sort of a path where it's like, oh, I would like to, you know, do this? I know you mentioned that you wanted to be a veterinarian at some point. Yeah. Like, was that all kind of filtering through high school, or was like music kind of your beacon, as it were?
Well, my mom, since my mom was a teacher, she instilled it very early, like education's important. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you do well in school, I would get like rewards for good grades and all that jazz. And, I did really well in school, like really, really well. And it seemed pretty easy to me. I'm just like a fast person in general. So like when it came time to do homework, I'd be like, just try to get through it and go. And then I can go skateboard or go play whatever. You
sure.
know? So I always did good and always like did all my homework and all that jazz. But then as it went like into the later years, like thinking about college, my mom, like I said earlier, was like, you can live at home for free if you go to college. And I was just at this crossroads where I'm like, fuck, like I have no idea what I want to do.
Right.
All I care about is hardcore and touring. My friends are going on tour. How can we do this? And I just weaseled through. I went to OCC, Orange Coast College, a community thing for 2 years, mm-hmm. and would tour on like the summer break, the winter break, spring break, because all my friends were in college and we would literally book it around that. And then like every once in a while I would take a semester off because I got to go to Europe and like, I'll never be able to do this again. I got to take a semester off school.
Right.
Turns out I went 100 times, but like at that time,
yeah.
I took a semester off. So I just kind of like bobbed and weaved, and it took me 5 years, but I got a degree from Cal State Fullerton. But it was all the college thing was just because my mom, it was beat into me. Like, got to go to college.
Totally.
You got to go to college.
You were just biding your time.
Totally. Like, yeah, and I had to figure out how to appease mom so I could live at home, but make sure I get ingrained with all my friends who want to take me on tour. And then it like simultaneous. It was like, I was finishing college. Dave Peters and Dom Michael Lucifer from Throwdown were finishing college. All of us at Cal State Fullerton at that point.
Okay.
And then it was just like, all right, we're all done. Let's go. And we all just went on tour.
Right. You know? It's like, yeah, it timed perfectly.
Totally. And looking back, it's like people always ask like, you know, what degree should I get to get into management? And that, you know, nothing, of course. But
right.
And it's like, do I need the degree? Absolutely not. Did I probably learn time management and people skills like everyone talks about? Probably. But
yeah.
It's hard to say, like, did I need it? It's like, I don't know. It led me on this path that I went on that I ended up loving. So sure. I'm going to say it was crucial. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Some way or another. It all
But I think usually, like, to me, what's sort of indicative of that experience is like your ability to obviously realize that that there is obviously something important in regards to like the societal standards and obviously like upholding your promise to your mom,
totally.
But then also having the context of just like, but I'm still pursuing the shit I care about, you know? So it's like, cause obviously it's like some people, and I think that's, you know, people just get lazy where it's like, it's hard to do both, but you were just like, well, no, I gotta do this because I gotta do this.
Yeah. And I would hustle. I would stay in the know. Like I would do shows on my own. Like I was doing everything I could to be as active as I could without being in a band. That's all. Everyone I knew was in a band. Everyone.
Yeah. Why did you never play in a band?
I can't do anything. I have no talent.
That doesn't. I mean,
I can't run around like an asshole and scream on stage. Yeah, well, right?
I mean, that clearly, that most of us that ended up doing that,
I can't even scream. I don't think. I don't even know. I just could never do it. And I don't know.
And
I was obsessed with it though, dude. Like more than probably most people. Like I would go to like all of. There was probably like 3 years where I didn't miss an 18 Visions practice. Why was I doing that? Why would I sit there in a room you can't hear anything at Orbit Studios? You know this.
Of course.
You can't hear one thing, and I would just sit there. It's probably why I'm deaf now. And just get blasted from you like twice a week. I would always go.
Right.
Why?
Hey, show up to practice, Biggie. We got practice.
I have no idea why I would do that. I loved it though. I loved every aspect of it. And but I was never in it. And so I would go on tour, I would sell their merch, and then as I was selling merch, it's like, well, do you want to like go get the money from the promoter, you know, or $100 or whatever?
Settle
like,
the show.
Yeah, I'll go settle. I'll go settle this show, and which means here's your $100, you know?
Totally. And then you got to count it in front of them to make sure they gave you the $100.
Exactly, you know? And it just kind of morphed, you know? I went from selling merch and like picking up quote-unquote tour manager duties here and there, and I became a tour manager. And then that's what I really did for a long time.
Sure. As you were obviously starting to get completely engulfed by, you know, like hardcore and music in general, it's like, was your mom like, I'm really concerned. Like, I don't know what it is that he is doing.
Yeah. She wasn't concerned. She was just weirded out. She's like, all I know, cause my home was like home base. My mom was a cool mom. And she's like, they all come over. They're covered in tattoos. They're really nice. They go upstairs. Who knows what they're doing? There might be girls up there. There might not be like there's loud music. Who knows what's going on? But I know they're home. I know they're safe. I know they're not partying in the drinking sense, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So she was cool and very, very supportive of it. And then when it came time to, like I said, start touring more, she just looked at her own life and said, like, I never got to go to Europe, let alone for free, let alone with 10 of my friends. You know, that first time when Throwdown and 18 Visions went together.
Mm-hmm.
And so she let me, you know, let me do that. I think she just knew that I just had a good head on my shoulders. You know, like I was, when I was getting in trouble, it was stupid shit, you know, with the law, like not, I wasn't like a bad kid.
You're
rambunctious.
Dumb teenage stuff, like vandalism.
I was very respectful and all that jazz, but I was doing stupid shit.
Right.
But she let me kind of have free range. And she's like, if you're not getting in trouble and your grades are up, go nuts. I like argued that with her because I wanted to stay out late and skateboard and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, what do you care? Like, if I'm not getting in trouble
right.
and my grades are up, like, what do you care? Like, what's the difference if I'm upstairs or not? And she's just looking at me like, okay, you win. Like,
I have no argument.
You win. And I'm like, it's like, had no curfew. I was out. You know, I thought I won this victory, and I literally sat around softcore at my friend's apartment, as you know, like, till 4 a.m. doing nothing.
Right.
Well, but in my head, it was like, fuck yeah, I'm out at 4 a.m. totally. Sitting on this couch doing nothing.
Well, I think it's like any time that because I had a very similar experience with my parents where it was just like, it was a matter of like, if I produced what they, I guess, quote unquote, required of me, like my life was so much easier. And it's like all of my friends that didn't experience that sort of like trust, it's just like, you're making your life really shitty.
Yeah.
Like by you not living up to whatever standard your parents have set, like I'm like, it just never made any sense to me why it's like, why are you making your life hard? Like,
yeah,
why don't you like listen to what it is that they want and then do that, and then they will, I mean, as long as they're reasonable parents, they'll be like, oh yeah, like your mom, like obviously she had no argument.
No, not at that point.
Right.
You know, at that point I had one.
Right. And so I presume just because it was the sort of touring, and like you said, you were kind of just working your way up. You obviously like loved being out on the road, and you loved all those experiences that kind of, you know, were tied up into that.
Loved it. I loved every aspect of it. I loved seeing different cities. I loved being at a show every day. Yeah. You know, like, it's crazy to think back now, like the bands I toured with and how many hundreds of times I saw them and watched all the whole time. Just stoked.
Yeah.
I don't even get it how I could have, but I just loved it so much. And meeting everyone, met so many so many amazing people that I'm still friends with, and so many like just cool experiences, bad things that happen, great things that happen, just live a fulfilled, what I would consider a fulfilled life for so long that, you know, I did it for 10 years straight.
Right.
You know, hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did it hard.
What was the longest that you were, I guess, gone for within a year?
I would say 10 months, 10 out of 12.
That's brutal.
It was rough. But like average, you know, like, I guess I was kind of ping-ponging. Like, we didn't know what we were doing. So, like, when 18 Vision Throwdown stuff would tour, we would think, like, oh, we're so busy. It's insane. And we did, like, 6 weeks of touring a year, you know? But that evolved into once I met Every Time I Die through those bands, those guys are, like, animals. And mm-hmm. So they would just be gone.
Yeah, you know? 200-plus days a year.
Totally. Yeah. Like, I would say an average year at that time was, like, 8 months average. And that's, like, barring a 6 month album cycle and then like, a 6 month writing period for a slow year and then like 10 month crazy year. So I would say like probably 8 is their average. And that was when I was like, okay, this is like real deal. I can't work because I was kind of ping ponging around. Like, who do I go to? Like, okay, I'll go with you for 2 weeks and you for a month. This is like, E-Tid is, that's it. Like I'm their guy.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
So I went with them for like, I don't know, 5 years or something like that on tour.
Right.
I still work with them.
Yeah. Yeah. And you, because, I mean, obviously, like, I mean, reflecting on obviously what you're doing now from a management perspective, like, did you kind of take to the sort of like business aspect of the bands? Like, you obviously enjoyed that. And did you take to it immediately, or was it something that you obviously like had to learn how to do initially?
Yeah, it was definitely fake until you make it for sure. Still to this day, faking it. But it was, like I said, it was more like, well, I guess I'll sell merch because we need to sell merch. And I guess I'll look into the hotel because we got to look into the hotel. I guess I'll send in sound scans, you know, before at venue. You know what I mean? Like, I just kind of just acquired all the jobs. And it wasn't like they said, dude, you got to do this. You're our tour manager, you know? I would just take every responsibility and own it, you know? And mm-hmm. even if it wasn't my responsibility, after many years, what I realized what I was doing was essentially managing the band. You know, I just wouldn't hit anyone up. Like, I'd be like, oh, we need to book the van. I'll do it. We need to book a flight. I'll do it. We need to make a budget. I'll do it. You know? And of course the managers love me. They'll say, this kid's just killing
it. He's doing all of our work. That's great.
Like, I didn't know how to land us a tour. I didn't know like anything about recording contracts, anything like that, but anything on the road, I would do everything.
Uh-huh.
And as I got deeper and deeper into the band, you know, I became kind of a six member guy of like involved in all their personal shit and involved in all the behind the scenes shit. And I was very,
you knew everything that was happening.
Yeah. I was like part of the band, you know?
Right.
And, you know, fast forwarding, I got sick of touring eventually.
Yeah.
Met my wife, started like not, and it started being like, oh, I'm going on tour instead of like, fuck, going on tour. I can't wait. You know, started being like a different feeling. And after like a year of it really feeling like work, I was just like, fuck this. I was on like my fourth or fifth Warp Tour, which is like, you know,
it's a strenuous tour
to do.
What and, so with the like, talk to me more about that feeling that you get when, or that feeling that you got obviously when you kind of hit the wall of touring, because it's like a lot of people you know, do go through those like spaces where it's like, oh, like maybe this is something like I'll get out of or whatever. But it's like, you know, walk me through. Cause I mean, yeah, touring is obviously such a weird beast for people who just like either experiencing it like in very little amounts or don't experience it beyond just the band playing in front of them, you know?
Yeah. It was interesting because after a while I always felt like I'm part of this band. And then the reality was like, I'm not, you know, like
right.
I'm just a crew member. Like fire me. Like, I'm working my ass off to make sure their career has longevity and they get bigger as a band, which is great. But at the end of the day, like, I'm here, I'm making the max I can make with these guys. Like, they paid me great as a tour manager. It's like, I can't even ask for more. It's like, this is too much money,
right,
as is for this size of
this
band.
Role,
like, I was
sure.
earning it. I was doing enough work to justify it, but it's not like I can ask for more. So it's like, I just hit the crossroads of, like, I either need to, and I always had, you know, I wanted to make money. I wanted to be successful. So it's either like move on to the next level of touring, which becomes touring with strangers and arena bands and all this shit, which that just becomes a job to me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Or figure out the next step, you know? And I didn't know it, but at the time, this guy, Paul Conroy, who I call my mentor, who was managing bands and stuff. And I told him like, man, I'm just done. You know, like he used to manage Every Time I Die. I didn't at this time, but like he owned this big company and stuff. And Like, I'm done. I don't know. He's like, well, why don't you just come off tour and be a manager? I'm like, okay.
Yeah, you know, what, that sounds what good. Does that mean?
Yeah. And he's the type of person where, you know, someone can say that and then, like, walk away from me at Warped Tour and just, like, see, I'm on to the next thing.
Right.
But he got in his head and he's like, no, really, like, 2 days after Warped Tour, fly to New York, meet this band. Let's pick up our first band together. I'm like, okay. And that's right. How it started.
Right, you know, right.
We flew and picked up, as weird as it sounds now that I don't work in that world, the first band I managed was VNV Nation.
Oh, okay.
With him.
Oh, that's right. I think I remember that. And so was it one of those things where you just felt like you were like, well, okay, I guess this is the opportunity for me to get off the road. Like, and you're like, I'm going to put my all into it.
Yeah. Well, it was like, I'm going to try this. Cause I didn't know like what.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Like a guarantee, you know, anyone can say they're a manager. So there's no guarantee you're going to succeed.
Right.
So in my head, I was like, well, this is a way to test the water. I'm just co-managing. I essentially was doing what I was doing for Every Time I Die, but for VNV Nation. I wasn't doing anything on like the big business stuff. I was like, oh, you need flights and visas and budgets. Sure. Like, I gotcha.
The day-to-day managers.
Exactly. I was day-to-day. And I can do that from the road. And so I was finishing out this we talked on Warped Tour, which was obviously in the summer. And so I was picking up kind of momentum in the management world. Still only had VNV all the way until the next like March.
Okay.
And so I decided somewhere in there that this is going to be my last. I'm going to finish out Every Time I Die cycle because they were going to finish in Soundwave in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to go away for 6 months and write a record. And in that time, I'm going to like become a manager.
Sure.
And so long story short, when I was telling E-Tid like I'm done, it was kind of, they were kind of very cool and said, well, you got to be involved in some way. I don't know. They didn't know like the business of it, but like you got to do something with us. So I co-managed E-Tid with their, at the time, manager.
Got it.
So here I am, like, I got VNV Nation, which if you know that band, like, this is a pretty sizable band, and yep. I got Every Time I Die. Like, this is a great start.
Absolutely.
To
it adds
management.
The credibility that you were able to bring to the table. Was
yeah, and, it was, and I was comfortable. It's like, I had E-Tid, who were, like, my best friends, and if I fucked up, they're just like, eh, whatever. You know, they're not going to hang me out to dry or anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, I have some connection to pretty much every band I manage, you know, like on a personal level, just like with this podcast, like pretty mm-hmm. much everyone you do, it's like some weird, like, hey, we remember in the 2001, we did that thing in Chicago, like,
yep,
all the way to me where it's like just same neighborhood forever. That's how it is with all my bands. Like when I got brought on to the company I now own, which, you know, we can go into detail later.
Yep.
It was like, well, now go find clients. And I'm like, what do you want me to do? Like, hey guys, I manage bands now. You know, it's not my thing, but
right.
You know, scrutinized. And then between The Buried and Me, never had a manager. I was great friends with those guys from touring with, you know.
Yeah, seeing them on the road. Yeah. Right, right.
And I went to one of their shows and I'm like, no manager now, you know. And Tommy, who's like one of my great, great friends, was essentially managing the band at the time.
Yeah.
You know, a little weary, but he's like, you know, fuck it.
Let's try it out.
Again, I was like the connector to Paul Conroy was the guy, and Paul can come in and, you know, sell anything to anyone. So I partnered with Paul,
mm-hmm.
came on board with us. And now I have a partner in all these bands, but VNV Nation, Every Time I Die, Between the Buried and Me.
Right.
It's like starting to grow, you know? And then, you know, it's just a steamroll where Tara was at the company. They didn't like their situation.
Totally.
Scott was like, we want to stay at your company, but we should have Biggie do it. So now it's, you know, just starting to grow.
Right.
You know,
right.
And,
well, I think it's what, I mean, you recounting those stories, I think leads into a question I was going to ask, where it's like the, you can definitely see the people who have obviously, like, I guess come from a quote unquote scene. And obviously it's like, you know, you just know people because you know people because mm-hmm. you spent so many times in the same rooms as these people. Mm-hmm. And so there's that sort of like inherent level of trust where you're just like, oh yeah, yeah, you're on the same level. You know, you speak the same language. And that to me has always been indicative of how you do business with like all of your bands. Like, you know, how we were talking the other night, where it's just like, obviously you don't do contracts with your bands. Like
no.
All these things that are very kind of sort of the antithesis of the way a lot of other people do business, even
yeah.
people that have obviously come from our scene. And so it's like, I presume that's a very, you know, deliberate choice on your part, where it's just like, this is the way that I'm doing it. And this, they're like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that.
Yeah. Well, considering, you know, like everyone I manage pretty much, like I said, has at least one good friend that was my friend before managing.
Right.
I just wanted to perform for my friends. Like I would see these guys like being mistreated and mishandled, I should say. And
right.
Dudes that are unhappy. And I couldn't get it. And it doesn't stop now. Like
yeah.
it my biggest band I picked up was Circus Survive last year, and I remember meeting those dudes and just being like, I can't believe this is how, to my head, Circus Survive, I saw them in these huge shows, just like, oh, there's that huge band. Like, yeah, must totally. Be nice being Circus Survive.
Totally.
And then I meet him, and it's like, you know, Anthony's going through tons of problems. There's personal problems inside and outside of the band, financial problems. They hate their managers. They hate their labels. They, you know, what do we do? It's like, we're going to break up. I'm like, what is going on? Like,
right, yeah.
You're sitting on a diamond. Like, let's hold on for a minute. Give me 6 months and let's, you know, regroup. Right. You know what I mean? And I don't even know where I was going with that.
No, but I mean, it's funny because I mean, I hear this quite often where it's just like the kernel that you're getting at is the fact that you obviously just want to be helpful.
Yeah, I do. And that's the thing, like, don't get me wrong. My friends love to make fun of me. Like, I'm a suit. I like to make money. I like to be successful. I have no guilt about the success I have or any of that stuff.
Right.
But the core root of me, I love helping people. I'm a dude that would rather give a gift than get a gift. I just love it. Like, I get so much enjoyment of, like, someone texting me saying, like, you've changed our life. Or, like, man, we were in a bad spot. Or,
right.
You know, this situation would have sucked if it wasn't for you. Like, it's the best thing in the world.
Or, like, hey, you'll return a call. Like,
yeah.
I'm so shocked when it's like.
That's the other thing. Like, oh, yeah, like, I can't get my business manager on the phone. It's like, what are you talking about? Like,
you realize
he's making money right now off you. Right today they're making money off you. I'll never get it.
Right. He works. That person works for you, you understand.
Yeah. To the point to where, like, if I am in, like, if I don't see my phone or if I'm in the pool or something with my kid, like, 30 minutes will go by and they'll be like, hey, man, not a huge, like, they'll text me and then, like, not a huge rush, but making sure you're all good. You right. never don't reply. You know, like, oh, no, I'm good. I'm just in the pool. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I'm just
like, they're not mad. They're just like, did you reply right away? Everything cool?
Right.
Like, I'm on it with replies. I mean, you've emailed with me, you know, it's
of course.
Just like, bing, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're engaged because obviously you're the passion and, like you said, the identity that you've created for yourself in regards to, like, helping people. I think that really jumps through, and that obviously that makes bands and people that want to work with you more endeared to you because you're just like, oh yeah, like, that you just want to help. Like,
yeah, it's not. I just get lines get blurred. I just get wedged in from business into personal. You know, yeah. They're like, I don't know. Like, what should I do with, like, tax stuff? I kind of want to buy a house. I have, like, we made all this money. What's the best thing to do with it? And I'm not an expert by any means, but let me at least connect you with people that know. And so right. I just become the guy that people come to, you know.
Totally.
With
can you problems. Help me with this?
Sure. Yeah, totally. And the answer is most of the time, yes.
Right.
You know,
as long as it's involved with music, I'll probably be able to point you in the right direction.
Yeah.
Or maybe hopefully. Helping myself.
Yeah.
You actually mentioned this a little bit earlier. Where it's like because so many people speak about, like, you know, imposter syndrome, where it's just like, yeah, fake it till you make it. Like, that sort of idea where it's like, you don't have any idea what you're doing, but you need to act like you know in order for people to, like, have confidence and that sort of stuff. Obviously, because you mentioned that was the case for you for a long time. When did you feel like you kind of turned a corner there where it was like, oh, I feel comfortable, like, yeah. Like you said, being able to offer advice and being able to, like, actually be a quote-unquote professional, like, you know, it doesn't have to be a specific moment.
Oh,
but
there's,
like,
there's an exact okay. moment. Well, it's less a moment of when it was a moment when I took the training wheels off, basically.
Okay.
Like, I was connected to Paul Conroy,
yep.
And he was my guy. And I was, like, proudly, he was my guy. Like, oh, I'm Paul's dude. You know, he would never say I was day-to-day. He would call me his partner.
Sure.
But in my head, I knew what time it was. Like, he was the guy.
Yeah, you're you like, know? I know where I sit.
Yeah. Like, I'm not filing lawsuits against, you know, labels without Paul, you know?
Right.
And so he was my guy. We were killing it. We were doing I probably had, like, 5 bands, and he was taking a part of the commission. I was taking the vast majority of the commission, but he was, like, my go-to for the big picture stuff.
Sure.
And as Paul has done, he jumped to the next phase of his business career.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of has, like, a 2 or 3, I didn't know, but he has a few year window that he stays, like, engaged, and then he's swimming, he's going up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he sat me down in LA and he's like, I'm leaving the music business. And my fucking head almost exploded. He loves to tell this story now that I made it out on the other side and he made it on the other side.
Sure.
He's like, dude, I told everyone, and most people were probably sort of grateful because he's like, he's a badass. So most people were like, cool, fucking boss is gone. See you later, you know?
Right.
And he's like, everyone I could tell was either happy for me or relieved. And then there's you that was like,
where am I going?
Yeah. He's like, I felt like I told you your dog died. And I'm like, that's how I felt. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Right.
Like, what are you talking about? You're not, I don't know what to do. You know?
Right.
And he's like, you know what to do. I'm like, I don't know what to do. And that was when I was just like, all right, like, fuck it. And I had to tell all the bands, I'm like, Paul's leaving. Does that affect
where? Do you want to? Do you want me to stay
with me? Like Joker ass Biggie, like moshing, you know, like, do you want to stay here? And everyone stayed. And to this day, there are definitely times where I'm just like, I'm calling my lawyer. I don't know about this. You know, I'm calling, this is a tricky label thing. I'm calling Carl. You own the label forever, you know? And I'm still learning so much, and I'm still not what I would consider to be like a business badass, like the dudes that I look up to. But I can run a management company, I can manage a band, and I can delegate properly, but also not make clients feel like I'm just delegating everything, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You're hands-on enough to where it's just like they're, and not hands-on by saying like you're placating somebody, but you're hands-on where it's like you're getting the value out of whatever you feel that it is that, you know, we've agreed to from a commission standpoint. Where it's, it's not just
never, I would just be, my fear is when I hear these bands like, yeah, I fucking hate our manager. We pay him all his money. He doesn't do anything. And it's like in my heart, I'm like, what if the story so far sits around and says that about me? You know, like, what if like, you know, the biggest fear in the world. But like, I don't think anyone does that. But I just try to make sure that I'm never that guy. Like,
totally.
I'll answer everything you ever need. I'll be honest, if I think it's a terrible idea, I'm not just going to say yes and do it. You know, I'm definitely not a yes man, but I will try to get it done for you.
Right.
You know, whatever it is.
This summer, click into Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot and get after those outdoor projects with some serious cordless power from Ryobi. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. Leaves and debris are no match for the 40-volt power of the Ryobi leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Tidy up those flower beds and keep your walkways looking sharp with Ryobi's 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Yard work, done and done. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at your cordless power source, the Home Depot. Shop now at the Home Depot or homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
Hey there, all you lovely listeners. Let's dive into this latest release that is going to suck the life out of you in the best way possible. So listen up, because the Womanizer Next 3D Pleasure Air Stimulator, available from Pink Cherry, takes pleasure to a whole new dimension. Literally. Imagine taking the speed and intensity of the original groundbreaking Pleasure Air technology combined with new climax control so you can control even the depth of the airwaves. The 3D Pleasure Air technology offers a deeper, richer sensation that might just transport you to another universe of pleasure. The Womanizer Next 3D, available from Pink Cherry, is the only toy that allows you to take complete control of your orgasm journey with fully customizable speeds, intensities, and depths. Made from soft touch silicone, a fully waterproof body, and smart silence technology, you can enjoy pleasure anywhere, anytime. So what are you waiting for? Ditch the dull and enjoy unparalleled pleasure from the Womanizer Next 3D, available from Pink Cherry. Visit pinkcherry.com and save an extra 20% off with code NEXT.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Did you, because I do think that's an important component that I think a lot of people, I mean, I totally had this misconception. Granted, this was like late 90s, early 2000s, when the idea of managers for hardcore bands was such a weird concept.
Yeah,
I was like, Ryan Downey's the only person that manages hardcore bands. Like, totally. It didn't make any sense.
And even that was because he was
Throwing
out and bleeding through. They're like best friends. I was
of
like,
course.
I guess like, you know how to write a great email and can probably like open a bank account for us. Like, let's go. And they all learn together.
Yeah. That's the manager.
Yeah.
But like, cause so many people feel
when I say the public perception is the idea that it's like the manager is some sort of like, you know, puppet master, and it's just like, oh, whatever the manager says goes. Like, we hardly have that choice. Like, is that still common? Like, do people still perceive it that way? Like, from, I don't know, just the limited interactions that you kind of see out there, as far as the perception is concerned?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's so different now. Yeah. Now it's worse than ever. Mm-hmm. Like, in terms of people saying you're a manager, I mean, there's no prerequisite. There's no credentialing necessary. Right. So, like,
you got a Gmail account.
I mean, thank God. Like, otherwise, I wouldn't have a job. But it's hard to sift through that bullshit. But I don't know if, like, I guess, I can't really.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tough thing because, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's like, there are so many people that obviously say they manage bands, but then they clearly, not only is it that they're faking it till they're making it, but then they're just making some really, really horrible decisions for people. And then, you know, that business relationship is dissolved and people hate each other. And then that kind of perpetuates that.
Yeah, it perpetuates like, people thinking like, well, managers suck. Like, this guy didn't do anything. He just took money, which is what a lot of managers are doing.
You know?
Like, of course things are getting done, but I mean, most managers work off 15%.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
Of course.
If you're just a guy taking 15% of a band, like, A, you should be making up at least some of that money. Like, I'm not saying if a band pays their manager $100,000, the manager says, oh, well, I created $100,000 of income. Not necessarily that, but like, create some of that money or create an insane service. Like, now the sponsorships are gone and like the dreams are over of big money music stuff. Like, you have your own team and means to make a career, and that's it. It's like, all I can do is expand my team. So it's like, we have a, you know, me, a day-to-day, a marketing person, a sponsorship person, a social media person, you know, like anything you could possibly need, because as everyone says, now that it's just such the Wild West. It's like, whose job's what? Like, is this the label's job? Is this my job? And much like I did on tour, it's like, well, there's this thing and it has to get done. I guess we'll do it, because I'm not going to say, oh, sorry, guys, like, the label didn't do that, you know, because I just own everything. And if it's, hey, this didn't get done, I just go, my bad. Even if it's not my bad, if it's like someone on my staff fucked up, or oh, I checked in the label, they just didn't write me back. Well, I should have written back and see what's going on, you know. So we try to just gobble up everything we can. And once everything's internal and I know everyone that is working for me with me are great at their jobs, nothing in our control goes wrong.
Right.
You know? And there's no, and if it does, it's very easy. Like, I can just own it and say like, oh yeah, fucked up.
Oh yeah. That didn't happen because of this.
Yeah.
And you joked earlier, obviously, about the concept of, you know, being a suit and like being a person that is, because there's usually always like one or two people in a band that obviously have to sort of take on that business role or whatever. And it's that weird line of being like, all right, I got to be friendly and personable. Like, I guess what I'm trying to ask, you never struck me as the person who's going to be like, pick up the phone and like fucking yelling at people.
Never.
Like,
I'm a bees and honey kind of guy. It's pretty rare that like it gets that bad.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just an even keeled guy, and as much as I care, I just understand that everyone that is like that is looked at as a joke. It's like, oh, wow, this guy's flying off the handle. Big, you know, it's Tuesday, you know?
Yeah.
So where if I fly off the handle, it's like, oh, shit, like something's going on.
Totally.
But it's so rare. Like, you just get so many more favors if people want to work with you, you know? And I'll start working with these bigger agents and bigger labels, and I get compliments all the time where it's like, oh, it's just so nice to work with you. You're so on it, and it's, you know, blah, blah, blah. And part of me is like, God, should I be more of an asshole? Like, is a good manager like fighting for his band every day? But in my head, I don't think so, because 99% of the time you're going to work with the same group of 30 people in this industry. And if you just kill one verbally, or, you know, like, it's going to come back eventually, you know?
Absolutely.
So it's just more like, if there's a big problem that is going on, it's like, this is how this is going on right now. It's fucked up. We need to figure out a way to have it not be fucked up, you know, and have that tone of it more so than just like screaming and going nuts.
Right.
You know,
it's like, that's the default mode that people.
Same with the bands. You know, I hear these bands like going like a fight with each other. I'm just like, okay, guys, let's bring it in and let's fucking talk about it, because going nuts in the bus isn't going to solve anything. You know?
No.
So
is it funny for you being in a position now where, obviously, because you've been doing it for a longer period of time, that obviously people look to you? And I say people that are like, you know, asking advice for, you know, management and all that sort of stuff. Or is it like, do you feel that sense of responsibility where it's just like, oh yeah, this happened to me because, you know, Paul helped me. So I in turn want to help other people. Like, is it just kind of weird sitting in that sort of like,
yeah, it's weird when people will say like, oh, like you're the guy, like they want to meet with you at Good Fight. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. Like there's better managers than me at Good Fight for sure. You know what I mean? Like I'm not the best manager at Good Fight. I might be the most personable, mm-hmm. you know, I might, it's very weird. Yes. And, I love it. I absolutely love when people want advice or mm-hmm. when, you know, a younger manager, even though the answer is 90% no, it's like, oh, I'd love to come become part of Good Fight. You know,
right.
It's the best flattering thing in the world.
Right.
I love it.
Yeah.
And just like you were saying, it almost happened. I didn't know it at the time, but I was restructuring our business because when Paul left, it left our company in disarray where it's like at the time, everyone was on salaries except me. I came in as a commission guy because I just saw through that. I'm like, wait, I can make like X amount of dollars a year, or if I land some bands, I can make way more than that.
Yeah.
And I have this egg I'm sitting on from touring because I would tour and not spend money and, you know,
of course.
So I could see if this works. So when Paul left, it was like this disarray of like, okay, what are we going to do? Dad left. Let's look at everything. Here are the books. And it's like, okay, that salary is fucking insane.
Right.
You know,
you're not getting paid six figures. That's yeah, ridiculous. Like, yeah.
That's not happening. So we just restructured our whole model to be what it is now. And what it essentially, what I didn't know at the time, what I was doing was creating people's, the ability to have someone come in as a young manager and not just make 20 grand a year, 30 grand a year, 40 grand a year, but start with a small salary if they needed it, but start a roster. And if your bands get big, you're going to make a lot of money really fast, mm-hmm. you know? And I didn't know that's what I was doing, but I've created this model that has done amazing. The guys in my company have flourished, you know, both business and financially, because there's not one guy at the top paying $500,000 in salaries, hoping to make 700 grand over the year in commissions and net that 200. It's just like you eat what you kill. And if you don't kill, you don't eat. And it exposes you if you're slacking, and it rewards you if you're killing, you know, if you're doing great. And so people that have come on as like my quote unquote day-to-day managers just skyrocket up because they have great ears and their bands get big. And instead of being like, cool, I make 40 grand a year, this is great. Oh, I got a raise to 50 grand a year. It's like, well, I just made 100 grand last year because these couple bands did well. I'm gonna get the next big band and do well. And while I get a piece of that, it's nothing like crazy. It's totally incentivized everyone to work really hard to understand that I get out exactly what I put in. And if I put in more, I get out more. And, you know, I didn't know that's what I was doing. I wasn't trying to create this like big business plan. I was how do we not have to change email addresses and like not tell everyone we're a fucking shell of a company? And so I created this new thing, and now it's like, oh, this kind of works, you know?
Totally. the sheer panic of like, oh my gosh, it's so funny when your mind goes to like the simplest of shit where it's just like, I got to hold on to that.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, then all of a sudden all this other stuff that you build up where it's just like, that's a thing now, I guess, that like we're doing.
Yeah. Like people call us like, how are you guys set up? Because it just seems like you're doing so well. And I'm like, this is what we do. And they go like, it's fucking genius.
Right.
And I'm like, well, thanks. I didn't mean to at all.
Yeah,
like,
totally tripped into this.
I just didn't want to like have to change email addresses again and start a new company. But this is how we are now.
Right. And what you were just saying kind of answers the next question I was going to ask, where it's like, obviously with us being involved in sort of, you know, youth culture and, you know, continually like what was cared about 5 years ago is not cool anymore, whatever. Like there's obviously, it's a very high recycle point. Does it ever concern you where of just like, oh, like, you know, you do get to that point where it's just like, oh yeah, like, you know, I'm not as enthusiastic about checking records, you know, every week or whatever. Not saying that you're going to get to that point, but like that sort of like always being ahead of the game from like, you know, knowing bands before everybody else and that sort of stuff. Does that, I wouldn't even say concern you, but does that just kind of circle in your orbit where it's just like, oh yeah, like maybe I shouldn't, you know, that's something that I'm gonna have to be concerned about sooner rather than later.
Yeah. I mean, when I bring on people, I don't, when I say bring on, it's not like I find another 35-year-old dude. I find young 20s people that are like have their ear to the ground on stuff and, you know, bring in amazing bands like Turnover years before I heard who they were and State Champs years before I heard who they were. And even now I brought in James Vitalo from Backtrack, who's helping me with Terror and, you know, Turnstile and stuff. And he's just knows everything about hardcore and makes it easier for me where I'm like, dude, I listen to and love hardcore, but like, I don't know if Freedom is bigger than Forced Order. I don't know that.
Yeah.
Maybe you do. Help me, you know?
right.
But yeah, like it is. I can't ever imagine being myself the guy that's like, I own Good Fight and these guys work under me and that's it. You know, like I can't ever seeing that be the case ever. But I am conscious enough to be like, I need young people to keep this thing happening and not just be some weird graveyard company of like, well, they have all these cool old bands, but like they haven't like built a band in a long time.
You know what I mean? No, totally. That's a good point. Yeah. You don't want to, yeah. You definitely, the graveyard notion where it's just like, oh yeah, I've been managing the same band for 20 years and like, that's it. It's like, you know, it's like there's certain bands where it's just like, oh yeah, we've had the same manager for 25 years. Does he take care of anybody else? No. What?
Like, yeah.
You've literally just managed one band for 25 years and that's it? Yeah, it's definitely a weird thing. The last thing I want to hit on was just the, you know, the idea that I see the way that you deal with bands as very much like you still are that sort of proverbial like sixth member, fourth member, how many ever are in the band. Do you still feel like you're filling that role, or do you have to kind of sort of emotionally disconnect as well, where it's like just because you do have to have that sort of like, I wouldn't even say professional distance because you're not like that, but just, you know, how have you navigated that? Because sometimes
I'm in, dude. Like, dude, I was from the highs of like being anxious for Circa to go on to 5,000 people at the Shrine.
Yep.
To like getting goosebumps watching that show to being like hand on my head, like stressing, like, dude, why are these pre-sales so low on this tour? Like this band's great. The album's great. Everyone loves, you know, the package is great. Why is this happening? It's not like, eh, fuck, get them next time. You know, like I carry it all, the highs and the lows, big time, you know, probably more than I should with how many bands I have. And like,
yeah, I was going to say, that's for lack of a term, like stressful. I mean, that's obvious because you also strike me as a very like hard in your sleeve person where it's like you are, because you kind of take on these bands and like you don't have that distance, like, I'm sure that emotionally wears you out.
Yeah, totally. Okay. I mean, luckily, most of the time it's like it's good, you know. Yeah. Luckily, it's like, oh, I can't wait to go see this sold out show. That's the usual vibe. But every once in a while, it's like, man, like I'm gonna write this terrible email to the band to say like, hey, put your head down and get through this tour. It's gonna be a rough one. Mm-hmm. And knowing what that would feel like if I was in the van or bus or whatever, it's just it sucks. Yeah. And now that some of these older guys are like, okay, so I'm leaving my wife and kid to go play these shit ass shows because I have to make money. It's like, so this is a job. Where now this is just a job. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, you know, you're clocking in.
Right.
See you in a month.
Right.
And it's brutal.
Uh-huh.
You know? And I hate when that happens, but it happens.
Right.
You know? And
I presume you obviously try to be as empathetic as you can to those situations where you're just like, hey, like, yeah, like you said, we'll put your head down, get through this, because hopefully the next things on the horizon will obviously be better. There'll be more hope or whatever. That.
Yeah, like, okay. I try not to dismiss it. Just be like, dude, just get through it. It's a bad tour. We'll get a good one soon. But at the same time, I don't want to be like, the sky's fucking falling. Like, maybe we look at day jobs, you know? So it's like finding the happy medium of like, we're going to get through it. It's a tough time of the year. It's we went too diverse on this bill.
Right.
It's too many bands are touring too much in the U.S., which is I could do a whole podcast on that topic alone.
Right.
You know, too many full-time bands taking away, da, da, da. But yeah, it's finding the happy medium of like, get through the tour, but I promise I care. It's not for lack of trying. You know, mm-hmm. if you want to see all the marketing that we paid a ton of extra money out of my pocket, out of my commission that I pay to have people do, I'll send you a list. Like, it's not for lack of trying.
Right.
Some tours just don't connect.
Yeah.
You know? And it's crazy. You know, you do one tour, it's insane, and then do a tour 9 months later that's insane, but sandwiched in the middle was this shit-ass tour.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, why? It's not like we just farted it out. Like, fuck that one. Like,
yeah, we'll just throw that right.
Yeah, like, we take extreme, so much energy and attention to detail when it comes to touring that it's just like, why did this not work?
Mm-hmm.
And another one that's just, you can't keep tickets from selling. Like, the other ones are just flying away. It's like, why? Like, what the hell?
Right.
It's so weird. And there's the person that figures out that science is a millionaire. You know what I mean? Because
totally.
Because
nothing,
no,
right. Nothing is calculable.
Exactly.
This is, it's all just, yeah. You, like you said, it's not for lack of trying. You put your best foot forward and then you're just like, well, I can't control this at this point.
Yeah. Like, I can do everything but physically take the card out of the kid's wallet and purchase the ticket. Can't do that.
Right.
I'll try everything up until then.
Right.
You know? And it's, oh man, it's brutal.
Right.
Nothing sits worse than like, I have this weird rush of like work at like 9 and 10 p.m. at night from band members getting off stage. That's kind of like band time anyway in general. And so like up and working late at night, and I'll get the like, well, Kentucky sucked. It's like, turns out, you know.
Yeah,
turns
out that the evidence is that stacked up the past 15 years that Kentucky isn't a hotbed.
Yeah, it's like, what do I say? It's like, dude, I'm sorry. At least you're in Iowa tomorrow or something. You know what I mean? Like, and but it's not that I don't care. I care. It's just, I don't know what to say, man. Like,
yeah,
you're like, get through it.
Right. You know? You're like, yeah, I identify with that.
Your band's not shot. You know, this is, you're still selling records. Your last tour did great. Your next tour did great. This one's not working.
Right.
But like I said, luckily, most of the time, it's the like, holy shit, Dallas was insane. Like, oh my God, this sold out. You know, that's the general vibe.
Right. Right. Know? And because you obviously, I mean, like you have a family, you have, you know, a daughter, is it one of those things where it's like you find you just have to budget your time more? Like, how are you kind of like, you know, addressing that sort of,
want to hear my exact day?
No, I would,
because you know, I have an exact day.
Of course.
it's very scheduled, but not in the sense of like, okay, it's this time I must do this. It just works out like this every time. I wake up early, get the first round of emails done, wake my kid up. Probably about like 8:30 or so, because she stays up late and sleeps in late, which is a whole nother story.
Right.
But wake her up, eat food, maybe watch some TV, to have like a little hangout time, you know, peeping at the inbox. Like, it's laptops maybe on the table while I'm with her and stuff, but
sure,
nothing insane. Get her dressed and ready to go to this like group nanny situation we have. We have like a nanny that watches like 5 kids at a time.
Okay.
And that happens at, we take her at 10. Come home and clear out the inbox, train at my house 10:30 to 11:30 every day, and then take a shower, go eat lunch, and then it's like the second round of hard work.
Sure.
All my like stuff, like anything like this or phone calls, everything I try to schedule in the afternoon, because the morning is kind of chaos with email and like getting the kid out and making sure I have time to work out and all that stuff. And then the afternoon is more like, okay, I'm going to dive into the things that take more than 5 seconds to fire back an email, do my calls, like really.
Right. Do the more bigger picture stuff.
Right. And that goes until, you know, whenever essentially, but 5:30.
Yep.
That's when I get my daughter June or my wife gets June. We meet back here, and then it's like life away time, family time with dinner, some sort of activity, whether it's like going to the Spectrum or just doing something fun. You
sure.
know? And then come home and either swim or get her down until bedtime.
Right.
And then once we put her down, open the laptop back up, do that like kind of 9 to 10 thing.
Sure.
And then, you know, hopefully it dies out and I can go to bed.
That's pretty
regular.
Yeah. That's, well, I mean, it's, yeah.
Fine. You know, it's definitely like I hate being like, well, it's 8:30 to 9:30. It's daughter time.
Yeah.
You know, it's
yeah.
not like it's, I've already put in a good chunk of work and then it's daughter time. And then I come back to work, and then it's workout time, and then I come back to work, and then I
right.
go eat and go to the other office, and then it's back to work, you know?
Yeah.
And then it's funny because my wife works a ton too. She owns her own business. So we both have to just focus and be like, this is June time. She's been with a nanny. She needs our full on attention, and we give it to her, and it's amazing.
Right.
And then she, you know, she's almost 3. She's kind of getting to the point where it's like, all right, guys, like, do my own thing now. Like, put me in my room. I got toys and iPads and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's like the breakdown of pretty much Monday through Friday.
Right. That's, I mean, because I think it's, you have to plan for that stuff. Because otherwise, it's like if it's scattershot and you're just kind of like figuring it out as it goes, it's like, that's
I watch the families that do it like that, and it's like, dude, it's so inefficient, you know?
Yeah.
And I hate saying like, your family's inefficient. But at the same time, it's like, dude, we're all doing so much
right.
to have a life that we want. There just has to be schedules, you know? And we've like made a point to like make sure we, you know, we go out on our Airstream every other week, even for 36 to 50 hours, you know, just a little trip just to turn off. Or the weekend, it's like, it's just family time.
Yep.
Because even weeknights, a ton of the time, or like this month, for example, like every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday I have shows.
Right.
Every single one. All my bands are all touring this fall.
Yep.
And so it's like now my weekends that are my family time is shot. So
right.
making sure I'm on point for the scheduled stuff is crucial.
Totally. You know?
And
totally.
That way when I do have to leave on a Wednesday to go to a show, it's like, as long as I did my dinner and my like trip to wherever we're going and get June ready for bed,
right.
I don't feel like an asshole. And my wife's like, I'm shot. Get out of here. You
right.
know what I mean?
It's like you're present. You're not just like,
totally.
Yeah.
And that's huge for me. And it was a weird balance because you know, I don't know how to be it. Much like anything else, I'm faking it till I make it as a dad.
Of course.
And I think we figured it out. Like, you know, considering how busy we are, I think we're in a good spot to where, like, my kid's not going to look around and be like, oh, I don't even know my dad.
Yeah, or, I don't know. My parents aren't even existing in my life.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, I'm kind of on my own. I got to, like, figure out my own shit. I'm not just, like, my parents aren't just staring at me 12 hours a day or anything.
Totally. You know?
No, I think that's those are all like just it's shit you don't think about until like you're in the middle of it and you're just like, oh yeah, like I don't want to be. I basically you always look at it, you're like, oh, I don't want to be this person or I don't want to. Like,
that's literally what it was. Like I just like, what did my dad do? Because I'm just gonna do the opposite.
Totally,
as easy as that is.
And it's amazing that you have those like those blueprints to look at, like whether it's like you know your own direct experience with you know a family member or it's like someone else you've seen where it's just like, oh yeah, they turned out like this because of this. So I'm going to like, I don't want that. So I'm going to do this.
Or yeah. Or even like the families that the rare family that parents weren't divorced. It was a lot of the times like, yeah, like that's my mom. We hang and dad's like never around. It's like, I just don't want any of that. I just want to like have a cool family, like right. A good family life, you know, like
totally.
I think it's just a super important thing to like make time for. And I'm in an interesting spot to where like, I understand most people like, leave at 8, get home at 6, and that's life, and you're shot at 6. I luckily work half the day from home and half at the office, so I can be there for the morning, leave whenever I want. As long as I get all my shit done, I'm going to be able to have a free schedule. And so, you know, I don't just look down at anyone that worked a 10-hour day and is like, dude, I don't want to go to Chuck E. Cheese at all. I'm shot.
Yeah.
But since I like what I do, while it's a lot of work, I'm never just like,
it doesn't feel
just
like
give me home. Just give me home. I'm so stressed.
Like, totally. Yeah, you know.
My stressful days, it's like, well, at least I was stressed out talking to all my friends. At least I was like in a shitty spot working with dudes I love. You know?
Right. Working with something I'm passionate about.
Exactly. Like working to better my company instead of working for someone else that who cares if I do well? It doesn't affect me. I don't get more or less if I do a shittier job, you know?
Right. So, I'm at this level. It will be unaffected by my sort of work or lack thereof.
Yeah.
Well, this was spectacular, Biggie. I appreciate you hanging out.
You're classified as spectacular?
I enjoyed the conversation. I was very much looking forward to this. So you delivered, my friend.
Hell yeah.
So that was that conversation. I hope you enjoyed it. I was really excited to do this because, for one, he was very, very generous and just like emailed me out of the blue and was like, I really like your show. I like what you're doing there. You're doing good work. This is cool. And anytime you hear that from like a friend who, you know, you may not hang out with all the time, you just like see him at shows occasionally. It was very, I don't know. It gave me the nice warm and fuzzies inside. So, yes, the episode this week is actually a new producer, a person who's going to try it out for the next, month or so and see if he, for one, enjoys it, and for two, is able to hang out with me and all the content that I produce. So, big shout out to Anthony Patera. He plays in a band called Zombie. Incredible band. You'll know a lot more next week because I will be maybe talking about them on the year-end episode. For those of you that have been asking for that, it's going to air next week. So yay, you can hear me and my friend Joey and my friend Jeremy talk about our year-end list. But anyways, that's not why I bring that up. Thank you very much, Anthony. He's the producer for the next month, and hopefully he enjoys it and we'll continue this relationship. If not, no harm, no foul. We walk away. So big shout out to him. Visit the show's website, 100wordspodcast.com. Follow the show on Twitter, 100wordspodcast. And email the show if you want to, 100wordspodcast@gmail.com. And until next week, please be safe, everybody.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com.
Hey there, all you lovely listeners. Let's dive into this latest release that is going to suck the life out of you in the best way possible. So listen up, because the Womanizer Next 3D Pleasure Air Stimulator, available from Pink Cherry, takes pleasure to a whole new dimension, literally. Imagine taking the speed and intensity of the original groundbreaking Pleasure Air technology combined with new climax control so you can control even the depth of the airwaves. The 3D Pleasure Air technology offers a deeper, richer sensation that might just transport you to another another universe of pleasure. The Womanizer Next 3D, available from Pink Cherry, is the only toy that allows you to take complete control of your orgasm journey with fully customizable speeds, intensities, and depths. Made from soft touch silicone, a fully waterproof body, and smart silence technology, you can enjoy pleasure anywhere, anytime. So what are you waiting for? Ditch the dull and enjoy unparalleled pleasure from the Womanizer Next 3D, available from Pink Cherry. Visit pinkcherry.com and save an extra 20% off with code NEXT.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo!
Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sarge, High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again.
Platoon, present cell phone. High Five.
High Five.
Casino.
Casino.
Win at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.